Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for coming here on such a warm and sunny day. Actually, the topic I'm going to be talking about today is what I call the social injustice warrior. And I became particularly interested in this topic because of the rise of what has become a derogatory term now, which you all hear called the Gutmensch. Did I say it right? Gutmensch. I probably have a Canadian inflection on gut. But anyhow, so how did this term, the social justice warrior, become such a horrible thing? And so instead of focusing on her, because I don't think she actually exists, I'm going to talk about this category of the social injustice warrior, and in particular, what his relationship to technology is. So it's sort of a winding argument, so I'll go slow. Okay. So the term echo chamber is often used to describe this political conjuncture of uncivil society, one polarized between camps and tribes, parties, and other binary spatial configurations of competing political ideologies and their appropriate hashtags. The common condemnation goes something like this. Today's society is mired by divisive media echo chambers, false information and feedback loops composed of extreme positions on the right, such as white nationalists and misogynist men's group, and then on the left, there are social justice feminists and anti-racist activists. So people don't just engage with each other anymore, they don't listen to relevant arguments. This propels all of society into according perpetual tribalism at the expense of forging a common humanity. But what do I hear when I encounter this diagnosis of a political culture broken down and divided by fractious echo chambers? What I hear is that a wounded white male identity has been granted a culturally legitimate claim to injustice, what we might call the social injustice warrior. So who is the social injustice warrior? He is quite often a white misogynist with a notably curious relationship to technology. He uses various media to monitor the injustices and social inequalities claimed by others and quickly counters and debunks their legitimacy. He casts all forms of modern social justice related to race, gender, class, sexuality, you know the list, and so on, as an injustice upon him. So even as he denounces the notion that identity should be the basis for political rights, he gathers the white put upon male as a new identity category in need of justice. So I think culturally, we all probably have our own lists of who our social injustice warriors are. So I have my own set in Toronto, you probably have your own set in Berlin, there's a sort of global set. But the problem here is that I can't help but pause in exasperated defeat. No matter who these social injustice warriors are and where they are, they're culturally specific. So I know that filing complaints of injustice are usually quite difficult to do. In institutional settings, they require experts, due process, they have to be verified. In fact, this process is already so problematic that the social experience of injustice, as we know, or I hope we know, is vastly underreported, often unintelligible. So the inability to file a claim of injustice related to harassment, exclusion, starvation, resource depletion, racial profiling, stolen lands, murder, rape, missing sex workers, and queer men is well understood. There's no form to fill out for the injustice of being persistently and structurally drained of capacity. So Sarah Ahmed writes of how even feminist-tinged speech in a university setting gets registered as complaint. Quote, "The word complaint derives from the plague in a vulgar sense, to strike at the breast. A complaint, sick speech. Maybe she is heard as speaking from ill will, not only as a being ill, but as spreading infection, as making the whole body ill." So by the time the social injustice warrior is able to claim injustice and be blithely included in the list of echo chambers and political sides and positions one should listen to and engage with, we might as well say that justice as a guiding principle has been abandoned. But rather than abandon this concept, I suggest we get a handle on the social injustice warrior. And this necessitates for me getting a much broader and critical sense of how the technological runs through his meteorological rise to power. So I refuse to hold up the social injustice warrior on the one hand against the social justice warrior. These are not warring or opposing competing echo chambers. Her reason for being is not oriented towards him, but to justice, but he stands in the way. So this is not the right tension. This is the tension I'm concerned with, and I think it's a way of mapping current political tensions, which is quite false. So I have a very disturbing image to show you. So look away, and he's going to appear more than once, unfortunately. So the social injustice warrior par excellence, an emerging political cultural figure, hardly emerging, but and contemporary technological phenomena. So what I want us to think about is he's a technological phenomena, not because he uses technology and plays with his personal device with reckless abandon, but because he's reorganizing the field of the social through technology. Technologies are environments that are inherently social, in which all of social life unfolds. Our media technologies set the parameters of what is possible. Technologies alter conceptions and experiences of time, space, and distance. They alter what it means to be human and what it means to be in relationship to one another. So his rise is not solely related to some infected dialogue or poor debating conditions or even spoiled information from unjust technical processes. Instead, I want to suggest that the social injustice warrior and all the other little peons turn media pundits by way of having access to Wi-Fi know something about technology and injustice. The social injustice warrior operates with a theory and approach to technology, so I want to grant him the illegitimate status as a media theorist, I guess. The social injustice warrior operates with a theory and approach to technology that also explains the way he conceives of social differences. So what we have to contend with is the fact that it's this technological imaginary that's in large part it's a technological imaginary that in large part designs a social while it makes room for and legitimizes the parasitic power of the social injustice warrior. I call him parasitic because he feeds off of the social yet makes exclusive this ability to disengage from social responsibility. So understanding his theories of technology and his technological strategies are the key to his undoing in the name of justice. They also offer feminist and anti-racist activists a potential means of a technological strategy for resistance. So I want to uncover his theory of media, his theory of technology, and how this relates. So I'm going to. It also elevates the technological as absolutely necessary in cultivating conditions of justice. So I'm going to begin. I don't just quote McLuhan because I run the McLuhan Center. This is actually very significant to this project. So Canadian media theorist Marshall McLuhan perhaps didn't really realize what he was really letting on in his seminal text, Understanding Media. I shouldn't use the word seminal either, but anyways, man becomes, as it were, the sex organs of the machine world, as the bee of the plant world, enabling it to fecundate and to evolve ever new forms. The machine world reciprocates man's love by expediting his wishes and desires, namely in providing him with wealth. Sorry, one more time. So let us anoint the social injustice warrior the status of the sex organs of the machine world. That's what I'm going to do for the rest of my talk. I'm going to anoint him this status, rife with masculine intensity and a blueprint for world domination, and we're going to uncover some of his strategies. Strategy one, hide in your mama's basement. This relationship between man and machine, the man and world domination, isn't always so glamorous, and that's part of its deceptive power. The popular caricature of the internet troll has him sitting at home in mommy's basement, clutching his keyboard and attacking the comment section like a medieval soldier with a crossbow in a siege tower. All that multi-culti, feminist, decolonizing, queer, black, intersectional, gender-neutral toiletry taking place out there is just too much for him to contend with. So he lives in his mommy's basement, has become a common popular cultural insult aimed at internet trolls, online misogynists, boys in tech, or what we call the tech bro, and other conservative political figures stalking the public realm. This figure is imagined to be politically impotent, compensating for his lack of real-world offline social power with whatever online power moves he can make. So I'm sure you have, maybe you have the Mummy's Basement version in Berlin, but I'll give you two that circulate two recent circulations in North America. So some recent high-profile cases of said mummy's basementism include the online internet misogynist Roosh V, who is behind returnofthekings.com and a series of books, both of which promote rape. Mother's Basement is where he has been said to be hiding out while busily working to self-publish his anti-LGBTQ, anti-feminist, and pro-rape agenda. And I want to point out here, it's the leftist critique that puts him in Mummy's Basement, too. So it's not actually that he lives in Mummy's Basement, but that the way that we critique him, we put him there. Similarly, this is going on in Toronto right now. Toronto's lifestyle and culture organization, online magazine Blog TO just went viral for the headline that claimed Doug Ford, our new conservative anti-LGBT LGBTQ, an anti-transit, can you imagine, an anti-transit brother of the late crack-smoking Toronto mayor, Rob Ford, you can Google him, had announced his candidacy for provincial conservative leader from his mother's basement. The mummy's basement meme generator captures an unkempt, geeky young man sitting alone in a wood-paneled and computer-saturated basement. It's evident that he hasn't seen sunlight in years. So the feeling disposed of male who hunkers down in mummy's basement and turns to technological portals to design a more habitable world for himself seems to especially beset the wounded masculinity that festers in the right wings of the political spectrum. But across the political spectrum, from the men's rights activists to even feminist scholars, there's an acceptable cultural correlative link between antisocial boys and escapist media. Whether it is angry alt-right types or what we call the quiet bro-grammar, tech is where anxious young men are actively relegated via discourse to this terminal position. We are over and over again reminded that he is harmless and off in his own little world. Just ignore him, don't feed him. The approach to the social injustice warrior emasculates and infantilizes, but falls short of recognizing the political significance of this technological assemblage, the way it dwells in the social and takes up an active position. We already know that the social injustice warrior has been at the helm of designing the world in and through tech for quite some time now. Just this past summer, James Damore was fired after posting a memo to an internal Google message board, now known as the Google Diversity Memo. He argued that women may not be equally should not be equally represented in tech because they are biologically less capable of engineering. He has since filed a class action suit claiming that Silicon Valley now unfairly discriminates against white men. He has co-opted the language of feminist struggle. He refers to his firing as, quote, nothing other than a witch hunt, unquote. But all of this trolling is actually tinkering. It is not just parasitical harassment or exclusion, but capacity building, oriented towards cultivating a world that won't treat him like a disposable utility. And it is also, we must understand, a very heavily guarded enterprise. So it might be uncomfortable to acknowledge that the power of such a it's rather uncomfortable to imagine the power of such a pathetic figure. But what is injustice anyways, other than pathetic and antisocial? One of the most disenchanting thoughts for all feminists, I can assure you, and if I can actually just for one speak of some sort of universal experience that might bind all feminists, is having to contend constantly with the lowest common denominator. Mama's basement needs to be evicted. Strategy number two, drain all the social batteries. While those on the front lines of social justice are often told not to tire themselves out by feeding the trolls, this point may be increasingly moot after Putin's financing of factories to employ troll labor, not only for his own election, but to create social unrest in the West during the 2016 election of Trump. So workers at this troll factory were surveilled, kept under tight control, given specific instructions on themes and keywords and terminology to include in their posts. They were fined for failure to reach quotas and for poorly executed scripts. What's also interesting is it employed creative labor. It employed good writers. So this was sort of a, sometimes for some of the workers, it was a fantasy world of just being able to write, I guess. They were told to educate themselves and strategize, locate all the competing identity claims for different groups, and wage strong opinions on things like gun control, abortion, and also learn the newest racist lingo, troll away. So the IRA, the Internet Research Agency, was not just a chamber for the production of misinformation. It's not just something we needed more, or we now need new media literacy for. In fact, this troll factory is not really a discourse community at all, but a concrete infrastructure, a new technological institution, an actual factory with headquarters, job applicants, workers, with paid contracts for technical missions. It produced more than misinformation and unrest. It also produced the distracting discourse that society was being divided by insurmountable social divisions. And so, and here is a moment to start to think about how it's also the explanatory power of echo chambers that might be doing some of this work for us, and why I'm sort of suspect of this term. So as we know, and we know, a tried and true way of reorganizing the social and maintain one's supreme power is to drain others of the capacity to retaliate, to respond. And this is what happens here. So what you have here is you have right-wing hate mongers, either as bots or pale trolls, will meet almost every leftist claim of injustice with a swarming army of cries of counter-injustice, including threats of violence and vitriolic retribution. And then the leftists accidentally retweet. I realize I'm polarizing right now. Leftists accidentally retweet. I was like, as I'm saying this, I'm like, oh, crap. Okay, leftists accidentally retweet the fake news of Russian troll factory workers and then engage in mind-numbing and long-winded political debate with bots to no end. So you have exhaustion on the otherwise liberal left. So what you have then is a response is all these exhausted people. White liberal feminists find themselves disgusted and exhausted. They must turn to self-care, sharing tips on how to take care of oneself in the age of Trump. I don't have enough time to get into all this, but another thing that's happened recently in the U.S. is the liberal blockade. So you should look this up. It's actually quite fascinating. So other than just building luxury apocalypse bunkers, there's this new thing called the liberal blockade or blockade communities, a new practice of living where one avoids all current events, news, social media, radio reports, headlines, and political discussion. You should read this article on your own. It's almost like satire. But this man even told everybody in the coffee shop he goes to every morning, please don't talk to me about the news when I come in. And he talks about how he's trained everybody around him to not know anything about current events. But I think this speaks of something. It speaks of sort of this exhaustion and also the choice to be able to step out of struggles for justice. So, though, with neoliberals slowly creeping out of the picture, a vacuum of power is left for the social injustice warrior to fill. All the while, struggles for social justice wage on, but now get cast as part of all that noise that needs to be turned off. So strategy number three, my final strategy. Or his final strategy. So make social injustice obsolete. Replace the broken machines. So if one can't control the accusations of injustice, then one should replace the source of the accusation. This is his third strategy. So straight out of the mouth of Breitbart's pinup Milo Yiannopoulos, one of the founders of the sexist movement on the right, one of the main voices of sexist, which is a men's rights movement with a professed mandate to withhold reproductive participation in order to strike at the heart of feminism. They call it the sexist. It's true. I mean, it's a real thing. it's true. But you have to look at this quote here. The rise of feminism has fatally coincided with the rise of video games, internet porn, and sometimes in the near future, sex robots. With all these options available and the growing perils of real-world relationships, men are simply walking away. What Milo outlined, you're laughing at all the things that I don't think are funny and then not laughing at all the other things I do think are funny, so you're confusing me. Okay, so what Milo outlines is a technological solution to deal with accusations of harassment, sexual violence, to basically replace the old technology. If you just look at this quote, women here are rendered an obsolete technology. Notice how women are situated as simply another technological tool in this long line of media technologies. But now, women, as technological tools, have gotten a bit too out of hand, even unruly, and thus no longer containable, and therefore now undesirable. Men can turn to these newer, more controllable models, seemingly better fit for life as secondary companions. They can immerse themselves in relaxing games that can connect to different male communities. They can view images that don't talk back. They can love robots who won't demand care or scream injustice. And if they do, they can always be updated and better programmed on demand. So if women don't want to fulfill their positions within a patriarchal society, then so be it, the argument seems to go. There are other toys and technologies that will. A similar argument runs through Mr. Trump's one-time pick for labor secretary, but he extends this imaginary of broken parts to include the working class, the differently able, the aging, and the race. Andrew Puster, who extols the virtues of robot employees over that of humans, says they're always polite, they always upsell, they never take a vacation, they never show up late, there's never a slip and fall or an age, sex, race discrimination case. In this example, Puzder is referring to the coming robot business revolution that will fix capitalism's labor problems associated with calls for equity by the race, class, and gendered workforce that bogged down the otherwise smooth functioning of the factory floor. So the alt-right, or the right, likes to refer to feminism as a cancer onto the social. But there is, if we look at this, another hidden discourse on technology and women in their rhetoric. Robots and sex bots and video games are, for him, the new media to manage the potential for claims of injustice to be directed towards him. The feminist woman is viewed within this framework as a hacker and a hijacker who spreads her virus and disease across humanity. She is now the faultiest of technologies in an otherwise long line of technologies that have been designed for, taking care of, and reproducing love in a male, reciprocating love in a male-dominated world. Feminist women emerge as the uncontainable technologies, like a vacuum cleaner that has lost its suction capacity or a dishwasher that keeps leaking. So I find this position actually something we can run with. We can run with this position of broken down machines rather than deny it. The rise of Me Too revealed that perpetrators of sexual violence really didn't think that their machines would talk amongst themselves or turn against them. So what greater threat to the already feeling disposed of male than to learn that women talk to other women, that their machines would talk to other machines? So I want to conclude here by saying, the social injustice warrior's rise is technological, and taking him down will thus require more attention to the technological. The goal is not to frame the social justice, is now not to frame social justice or even the justice warrior as a counter strategy to the social injustice warrior, but rather, I suggest, co-opt the status of broken machines and take away the social injustice warrior's technological conditions of possibility. Can we configure social justice so it doesn't register as complaint at times, one that won't be recognized, one that's not recognized anyways? Is there a technological strategy? It's not an either or, but it's an addition. Can we think of technological strategies? So be resistant by way of taking up the mantle of the broken machine, refuse to work well rather than be drained of capacity. Be the broken machine so that one cannot even be replugged into the apparatus and recharged. The people that have been treated like machines are getting tired. They don't want to be talked at and they don't want to talk anymore. So I also want to suggest co-opting the language of the machine to understand contemporary power imbalances. So for example, do you have this term here, mansplaining? Mm-hmm. What's the German way of saying it?
Same word.
Oh. Well, that's not fair. Okay, so I said so co-opting the language of the machine to understand the contemporary power imbalances. So take something like mansplaining. Perhaps it wasn't just that it's boring, but as storage devices for great amounts of his information, the repositories of his information have no more file space. And as for big data's new romance with sex bots, AI, Siri, and Alexa, we should say go help yourself. If you've noticed, there's hardly a feminist response or even a popular cultural neoliberal feminist concern that we, women, or others are being replaced by these technological tools. The fact that these take on the feminized form to begin with and the sorts of activities they are oriented towards are hardly grounds for feeling disposable or disposed of. So none of us are going to be like, no, Alexa, please let me do that. The dismissal and diagnosis of a political culture broken down by echo chambers is unable to account for the technological as a form of power. It instead remains overly wed to a conception of dialogic publics and media space while being woefully blind to the relational and uneven character of these so-called echo chambers. So to alleviate structural inequality demands that the structure needs to be reworked in a very particular way. And the technological is being reworked, and it is also the one reworking the social field to maintain structural injustice. So we are in a situation where we're surrounded by a particular type of male figure deeply invested in using technology, with designing the social without the slightest regard of understanding the social. And the rise of the social injustice warrior demands not a more compassionate listening ear or an invitation to a good conversation in the public sphere. I suggest we abandon what I see as a sort of liberal democratic principle of etiquette, sort of policing of discourse, which also we might say has been responsible for the allowing the social justice warrior to become a derogatory term. Instead, I would suggest the opening becomes one opening in all of this, becomes one of running with the machinic as a form of making demands for justice. What would be most threatening would be coalitions of broken down machines. And I suggest this in the spirit of until the feminist and socialist project of a different technological world can emerge. Thank you.